Welcome back to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and the crew today. Rob Hubler is going to introduce us to our special guest who was here with us last week and getting into the notion of the psychology behind climate science, behind how we think about problems. So if you're interested in climate science or not, is get to the bigger point, which is what we're really trying to think about and how we can get to that.
And what we're really trying to think about is that you're listening to KRUU Radio 100.1 FM in Fairfield, Iowa. Solar-powered radio in the best city in Iowa.
On the planet, I thought.
Oh, it's certainly on... Well, Iowa is on the planet.
Oh, okay. It's good right. To remember that. Good to remember. So, Rob, introduce us to... our famous guest today and why he's on today.
Well, our guest today is Jonas Magrum, and Jonas is, among other things, a entrepreneur here in Fairfield. He is also involved in a lot of... I first met Jonas down at the Democratic headquarters when in the last election, and Jonas was one of the hard workers going out, knocking on doors and getting votes out. And but Jonas is also working on the Bakken pipeline effort here in Fairfield. In fact, do you have a title in that organization? Are you you're the organizer?
I just coordinate.
One of the organizers.
Yeah, I just coordinate
one of the organizers.
Our group.
But another one of Jonas's emphasis in life is climate change, and he comes to climate change from. Some various angles, and I'd like him to talk to us about it, also to let us know that he does a radio program of his own. So, Jonas, welcome, and inform us about what you're here for and what you're doing.
Thank you, Rob. I do have a radio show on, right now it's on Blog Talk Radio, but soon I believe it will be here at KRUU-FM. It's called Climate Action USA, and I thought I would, since we're talking about the psychology of belief and the inhibiting factors of embracing science,
which really transcends the notion of Republican or Democrat. So Rob might have a Democratic perspective, and you might have one. It really doesn't matter, and it doesn't really matter even about the specific issue, but how we think about the issues that really. I call it becoming lazy thinkers, or you say even better, much better, you came up with courageous thinkers to really go through a problem. And we're going to get to, I want to hear the evolution of your thinking and how you're approaching looking at an issue, such as, in this case, climate change.
I agree with you that science is science, and science transcends political orientation, and yet the political filter through which we view the world very much influences what science we embrace and how easily we're willing to look at objective reality. But let me talk just real quickly about my own experience. I remember a couple years ago when I had a dinner, I think it was a Super Bowl party, and obviously that was in January, and there was a discussion about climate change, which I had really no connection with, and James Hansen, who was the first NASA scientist to testify before Congress on climate change, then referred to as global warming, stated in this article, I can't remember where, it might have been in Rolling Stone magazine, that if we built the Keystone XL pipeline and we transported this Alberta tar sands for delivery, for consumption and eventual delivery to the atmosphere, because of the high carbon content of that Alberta tar sands, he said, and I quote, it would be game over for the world's climate. Game over.
Wow.
And what he meant by that is that the consumption of those high high carbon fuels and the high amount of carbon that is produced in just extracting those fuels would push the climate off the edge. So when I heard that, of course, I was troubled by it. At the same time, I felt powerless. I felt completely powerless. Here's little Jonas Megrim living in little Fairfield, Iowa, and I felt that there's really nothing I could do. I was totally intimidated, a little depressed, but my way of dealing with that powerlessness and depression was just to forget about it.
Yeah, denial. Well, yeah.
So what happened, somehow, I don't know what changed, but this fall, or early last fall, I read a couple of books. One, both by Naomi Klein, who's a Canadian writer, has written for the New York Times and a lot of other publications. The second of which is called This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. And I read her book with a renewed interest in climate change and began to look at it as not just an inevitable and hopeless situation, but something that I needed to try to do something about. It was very interesting. I have to tell you a little side story here. I drove 5 hours to Chicago to hear her speak on her book tour.
Wow.
Did you hear this half-hour presentation? I drove 10 hours round trip. And I brought my book with me, and then she signs books afterwards. I said, "Will she sign it?" Because I brought it with me. So they said, no problem. I gave her the book, and what she wrote in my book was, "Jonas, be brave." And I thought that was profound. Mm-hmm. Because already, as I began to talk to people about climate change, what I learned, and my very, very incomplete understanding and very, very incomplete grasp of the science, which is still incomplete, but at that point it was like very, very fragile, I began to be attacked from all sides. And that was my psychological baptism in this fight. People on the right, my conservative friends, would throw these climate denial myths at me. I had no clue how to answer them. Every time I heard one, I doubted my position on climate change. I doubted everything I had read about it. And that brought up all this insecurity and doubt, self-doubt. And then I had people this whole contingent of quote-unquote spiritual friends who said, why are you wasting your time getting into the mud of life and all of this darkness? You know, why don't you just spread light in the world? And so I was getting it from all sides. And I really felt very, very insecure about, A, the science of climate change, and B, my own engagement in the climate fight. And so there was this, every day my guts were churning. Every day I felt this fear and tightness and insecurity about what I was doing. And
so when we get to the psychology of belief, that's what we're really talking about. How do you know what you know? How do you know what to even think about a certain subject? You have the tendency to believe that it's happening. And then, okay, now I've got to step back and go, do I really believe this? What do I really want to do with this? How do I want to live with this knowledge or not knowledge, or do something or not do something? What is real? But more importantly, who am I? Start with basic. Your vision. Who am I? Before you're even getting to your goals of why you're doing what you're doing.
Yes, and I've, for better or worse, I've always been someone who, I don't want this to sound in any way immodest, but I've tended to be someone who cares about making a difference in other people's lives, in the world. You know, I've done this fundraiser for 20 years to raise money for underprivileged children in our area, and or 22 years now, whatever it's been. So, yes, I had this tendency to embrace this idea that climate change is real, but I didn't. I'm not a scientist. I got a degree in social science. How many, 40-something years ago, 45, 50 years ago, who knew? I can't even count that far anymore. So the challenge for me was, A, I'm not a scientist, so how do I deal with all of this bombardment of doubt about climate denial? Or I should say, they call it climate skepticism. They say, oh, we don't deny climate change. We're just skeptics because, and I'll just throw one of the arguments that was thrown at me, and then I'll
explain. By the way, you are listening to KRUU FM, 100.1 FM, Mental Health Matters, and we are talking to Jonas today about the psychology of belief, and we're using the example of climate change to address those kind of deeper thoughts of, how do I know what I know?
Right.
Go ahead, Jonas. Tell us what did you do?
All right. So, for instance, somebody threw at me, do you know Jonas? You know, I tell them about climate change. We need to take action. They'd say it was a bunch of hooey. And they would say, Jonas, do you know that 31,000 scientists signed a petition affirming that there was a lack of evidence for us to take any action on climate change? Now, that, when I heard that, I said, wow, you know, that's impressive. So what I did was, this is the computer age. So I Googled 31,000 petition, 31,000 scientists. So here's what I found out. First, and I want anybody who's interested in this, I'd have them write this down. I discovered a site called skepticalscience.com. Yeah. And that site turns out to take every climate myth and dissect it and to provide the overwhelming evidence that it is, that it's bogus. And so, but I didn't know that at the
time.
Sides,
they took both sides of the issue.
Well, there is not two sides. That's the point. And I'll give you an example. I'll just take this.
There always doesn't have to be two sides, which is always an interesting thing.
There wasn't two sides when the science told us that tobacco caused lung cancer. And yet the same merchants of doubt undermined the science by claiming that there was inadequate evidence, that more studies needed to be done, more research needed to be done, more conclusive evidence needed to be gathered. And they managed to put off that government action for 20 years, while people were dying of lung cancer. So, and these are the same people. I'll go into that later.
Yeah,
so here's what I want to explain this one
thing. But it's fascinating, this thought of, like, sometimes there isn't two sides to a question. Sometimes it is somewhere in the middle. Sometimes, okay, there can be one side. For instance, maybe climate change is happening. But the question then becomes, then you have the debate, well, what do I do about it? Then it really does become a significant kind of question.
Well, you've got to get over the first hurdle, which
is this actually happening?
Yeah,
or not?
And do I? Yes. So I don't know if I'm too loud up there, Scott. But
no, you're doing fine.
So here's what I did. I found this petition thing. And by the way, there's a psychology for debunking myth that I've learned along the ways, and I've already violated it, because you don't lead with the myth.
Yeah,
you lead with the truth. And in this case, what I should assert is that the petition that I'm talking about is totally bogus, and here's why. A, it was a self-selecting group. There's not been any effort whatsoever to confirm that any of those 30,000 signatories were scientists.
Yeah, right.
Number two, in order to qualify, you simply had to have a four-year degree in any science. Mm. That means that podiatrists, dentists,
which are all good people.
Yes, absolutely. You bet. Computer programmers, medical doctors, chiropractors, all were none of whom had a clue about have a clue about climate science were signatories on this petition. So simply this, you know, you say 31,000 scientists signed this thing. That sounds impressive. But when you look at their actual knowledge of climate change, there's none. There is none. And as a matter of fact, then, so what I should have led with is that 3 different surveys of the published scientific literature have affirmed, 3 different surveys have affirmed that, published surveys have affirmed that 97% of climate scientists who publish papers on climate affirm that human use of fossil fuels is driving global warming, and the potential dangers, while unpredictable, could be devastating.
So that's point one, is you find that this happens, and you find the evidence against this not happening is this anti-science bias which exists. And it also exists because people are overwhelmed and they don't know what to believe. They don't know what to think. They don't, if you are not a climate scientist. I have a doctorate. I have a postdoctorate. I do significant cognitive work that I've done for years. I've done lots of research. Does not make me a climate scientist just because I've done extensive research. I can look at statistics and know what's real and not, but it's easy to get lost in the data. And it's easy to get lost in what's real and what's not, and what's happening and what's not happening.
So what you do, Scott, there's two things. Mm-hmm. First of all, there's a difference between, many people may not know this, but what represents, well, at least potentially reliable science is peer-reviewed published papers. Mm. Peer-reviewed, and what that means is that it's sent, that any scientist who wants to comment on a paper can offer their questions, their concerns, their protests, that all of those comments have to be addressed before it's actually published, and then it's published in a reputable scientific journal. So the 97% figure represents 97% of peer-reviewed published papers written by climatologists. Now, what you'll notice is that the debate, the doubt that's sowed by the anti-climate forces is never a published, or I shouldn't say never, because 3% are. It typically has nothing to do with, there's no research, there's no publication, there's no peer review. There's just an asserted opinion that's normally aimed at evoking ideological, emotional responses from people and not their measured, calm assessment of the scientific evidence.
Why would that be the case? What do people hope to gain by that? So you're saying just talking heads, commentators, are the ones making all this sound, just like with the smoking. It's more the commentators trying to say, oh, no, there's really doubt and let's have a debate. There's nothing to debate. You're saying that the debate is done. You're saying step one, this is happening. Step two is people who are or trying to say when we shouldn't look at this, it makes things awfully confusing to a general public, is because people get lost in that ideology and the thought behind things.
Yes, Scott, and there's more. What this doubt does is it feeds on a number of psychological, we could call them buttons or inadequacies or triggers in the general population. For one, we have the ideological predisposition to want to believe in enemies, right? That's why this whole politics in the U.S. is so divisive now. Divide and conquer. This is exactly what Orwell wrote about the 60s he wrote about,
yeah, 68,
that?
68, I think. Something like
that. You know, this, if you remember 1984, it was always about divide, you know, create an enemy, keep people focused on an external enemy so that they never deal with the injustices that they themselves are experiencing and who the real cause, the real perpetrators of those injustices are, which are their own government, their own political corruption. So the other thing is people don't want to have to make sacrifices.
It's...
People don't want to. It's just a natural psychological resistance. If you say to people that in order to, let's just keep it simple for a second. If you say to people, in order to save the planet, you're going to have to cut your standard of living, say, by 10%, 20%, 30% over time.
Or give
time.
Up driving your car.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think, do we have to check in? Is that what you're pointing at?
We are checking in. Rob?
This is KRUU FM radio in Fairfield, Iowa, 100.1 on your FM dial. And this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry, Rob Huber, and our guest today is Jonas.
Jonas Magrum.
Magrum, yes.
I think Scott has a little trouble with my, I mean.
Let me just interject something here, and not to stop the conversation as it's going on, but there are two things that I think, for me, makes this issue of climate change clear. One of them is that we talk about politics, and when we say the word politics, we generally think Democrat and Republican. Those are parties, and I like to look at politics as being a contest between conservative thinkers and progressive thinkers. The conservative thinkers are the people who believe government needs to be run by the elite and is business-oriented, and progressive are people who say, what is this, what do we need to do in order to make life better for people, education, mental health, all kinds of things, including the climate in which we breathe and we live. So, you know, I like to try to keep it on those terms rather than putting it into a political party. And then I'd also want to read this one paragraph by a guy named David Suzuki at the Suzuki Foundation, and it's in a blog, davidsuzuki.org, on climate change. Widely known as climate change skeptics, these individuals are generally not climate scientists and do not debate the science with the climate scientists directly. For example, by publishing, as you just said, Jonas, in peer-reviewed scientific journals or participating in international conferences or climate science, only to say that there, you know, things like there's not enough information, we can't act on this, we can't talk about it, and you know, that's the way in which many issues are approached, but particularly in this one that we're talking about here in climate change. You, by the way, have not mentioned, I don't think, your radio program, did you?
Just very briefly at the beginning, I have a show on blogtalkradio.com called Climate Action USA. I invite you to go there and follow the show, listen to the interviews I do, and also I hope James here more at KRUU FM, and I have been talking about getting the show here on KRUU, so that should happen in the next.
Who have you interviewed?
My best interview, the one I like so far, is John Cook, the Australian who founded Skeptical Science and who won a scientific award for his review of the published peer-reviewed literature on climate change.
Great.
He was one of the three different people that did independent surveys of the scientific literature. So let's go back for a second. You're right. It's about conservative versus progressives. And the conservatives hold that here's one of the problems in our that keeps people from understanding, embracing, and dealing with climate change. And that is that freedom which all Americans embrace wholeheartedly, all of us do, that no single word could possibly capture the essence of America like that word freedom. So freedom has been mixed or been co-opted by conservatives who want there to be absolute freedom with respect to how businesses operate in our country. And as a matter of fact, the Supreme Court and Citizens United and before that has affirmed that corporations are effectively people and deserve the same rights of freedom
right.
that we do as individuals.
Except they don't go to jail, but go ahead.
Oh, well, they certainly do not. So what is absolutely undeniable, and I will argue with anyone who disputes this, is that completely unfettered, free corporate activity does not take into account environmental degradation. It does not give any value to environmental degradation. And we to imagine that, now that's different than individuals, like local farmers here or local business people. We do think about the environment. We do think about protecting our environment for our children's sake. But corporations don't think like right. that. And what we see over and over again is the destruction of our environment, our water, our soil, for the sake of driving up profits. And as we may have discussed on a past show, these companies are competing for investment capital on the stock exchange. And they have to maximize profits, short-term profits, in order to qualify to be competitive, to gather for those investment dollars. So they are driven, they are forced by the system, essentially, to disregard environmental destruction for the sake of short-term profits. Right. And if we don't recognize that, and we don't take steps to regulate the corporate destruction of our natural resources, our children and all future generations will pay the price.
Okay, so let's finish up here. We only got a couple minutes left. In terms of this thinking pattern, so the first part of this is, one is getting, is an issue real or not real? What's the facts? What do I actually do? What is actually going on? Right, regardless of if it's climate change or if it's some medicine to take or if it's whatever it is, let's not live in denial of science or of some factual stuff. People get afraid of things that they don't know. They get afraid of whatever. Number two is, then what am I actually doing about that condition? Climate science or my mental health condition or whatever the societal ill is. And then three, once I start acting on it, what can I then learn and grow to keep shifting? How I think, how I feel, what I can create next from it. And so in this instance, you could go on and on about the factual elements of that climate science is showing unequivocally that the destruction of the planet due to climate changes. Second is, what do we actually do about it? And you're saying, for instance, things like the Balkan pipeline, it isn't a debate about, well, it'll be good, it'll be bad. It shows environmental destruction. When you start showing environmental destruction and that short-term gain versus long-term future, what do I actually create from that? What can I do today? And so part of your saying, what you say is, get a voice, get some strength, create something, move forward.
And without being, what one of the things I've learned is that I have to let go of my attachment to the results in order to survive psychologically. I've just got to get up every day, give my best, write blogs, record shows, and then let some higher power determine how it's all going to work out.
Excellent way to end. Thank you, everyone, and we will see you soon. Bye.